Okay, I'm Hardy Gross. I'm now from Berlin. This is a recent development. Until a few months ago, I would have said I'm from Würzburg in Germany. And I'm from the density functional camp, so to say. And we have developed time-dependent density functional theory and DFT for superconductors and well, today I'll talk about orbital functionals.
Okay, I'm Giovanni Bersini from the University of La Sapienza in Rome, Italy, and I have been active mostly on the LDA side and field of potentials, growth methods and applications, but I have been also trying some work on real Hamiltonian QMC, both on lattice and continuum.
I'm Asaima Adar from Tokyo, and I'm mostly working on strongly correlated directional systems and large black. I'm also interested in doing some work on the connection between the system. I'm working on multi-field approach, trying to be realistic.
And you give a talk next week.
I'm Zip Newman, I'm currently working as a postdoc in Paris, and I'm interested in DFT combinations of DMT and also to extensions of DMT to other languages.
I'm Jim Friedrichs from Georgetown University. My interests are a lot more on the strongly correlated physics model Hamiltonian side. I have done some calculations, electron-photon interactions in realistic systems. I'm also interested mainly now in transport and non-equilibrium effects.
I'm Patrick Bullo, the Maxwell Institute in Halle, in Germany. I am interested in a number of problems related with magnetism, magnetic interactions, spin, rise, transport, etc. In low dimensional systems, nanostructures. I am on the DFT side of this workshop, and I'm here to learn about what we can do better to have correlations in a more realistic way.
I'm Uli Anderson, I know nothing about many body theory. Try to do realistic band structure calculations, and I'm working at the mathematics of the
I'm Victor Odenka. Currently I'm postdoc with Gabriel Kotter at Rutgers University, and now involved in calculation of transport properties in real material using dynamical midfield theory.
I'm Mark Van Schopgaard from Arizona State University. I also know nothing about any body theory, but I'm trying to learn. I'd like to combine a GW method with some DMT.
I'm Peter Blechler, I'm basically from Springer Wohle, now in Clausthal, and I'm also interested in method development on the DFT side, doing realistic calculations. I'm interested in trying to understand DFT and what it means for new functions, putting it into possibly, or help putting it into our codes, and seeing what the impact of the physics is.
Okay, I'm Gabi Kotler, and I'm interested in physics of strongly correlated electron systems and also in interface between many body and electronic structure methods.
I'm Emery Kalwani, I work on electronic structure theory and LD plus U, GW, and trying to learn a little bit more about the MFT.
I'm Alessio Filippetti, I'm a former student of Giovanni Bachelet when I was in Roma, and now I work here with Nicola Hill in the material department, and I work on ferroelectric and magnetic material.
My name is Kai Wiese. I work on disordered systems, and disorder is also a realistic path.
I'm Igor Mayo from Ben Gurion University. I'm mainly interested in manifestations of electronic correlations in mesoscopic systems. Recently, I've become interested also in applications of time-dependent density functional theory and calculations of excited states and transport through quantum dots.
I'm Sergei Savrasov from Museum of Systems and Technology. I'm interested in electronic structure of strongly related materials.
I'm Seth Wittgenstein from Nijmegen, spent infinite amount of a lot of time in Stuttgart with an combine LMTO with DMFT within the multi-band currency, interested in magnetic.
I'm also Josh from Paris, and I have an interest in strongly correlated systems in general, in combination with the electronic structure of electric chains.
I'm Yoli Desaparez. I work with Fadi in Berlin and in Wolfsburg. And I have worked for several years in application of DFT mainly on molecular electronics.
Okay, so David Fadi Gross with
this is
the story from
DFT
side.
Okay, so
important information.
So I'm very happy to be here. Most of you know that I spend a big portion of my time in Santa Barbara, and now it's particularly great at this workshop. I will start with a maybe 5 minutes rundown of an introduction to DFT, which is kind of a standard introduction that sweeps all the interesting points under the carpet. And after this introduction, I will try to roll up the carpet and see what marvels we find below. Okay, so the starting point is the many-body Schrödinger equation. In standard DFT, we first of all make the Born-Oppenheimer approximation, so the nuclei are fixed and lead to a static potential for the electrons, and that's the Hamiltonian we have to deal with. And although there has been tremendous progress on the quantum Monte Carlo side and in the traditional quantum chemistry side to calculate the many-body wave function directly, it is clear from the fact that the configuration space in which the wave function lives increases exponentially with the number of particles, that the approaches to determine the wave function directly are essentially restricted to more or less small systems. And one also has to keep in mind that the wave function is not really the quantity that one wants to have. After all, we want to have physical observables, and that's the expectation values of Hermitian operators with respect to the many-body wave function. So this raises the question, is there a way of calculating these interesting quantities, the expectation values, somehow directly without really calculating the many-body wave function? And one way of doing that is density functional theory. It's not the only way of doing it, but it's one way. And the essence of DFT can be summarized in two statements. The first statement is that the density, knowledge of the density, is sufficient to calculate all the observables. So in the jargon of DFT, it says the quantum mechanical observables can be written as functionals of the density. Now, this statement alone wouldn't help very much, because it raises the question, how do you get the density in the first place? If we would have to solve the many-body Schrödinger equation to determine the density, then there would be no gain. And here helps the second statement, which tells us that the density of the interacting system of interest can be calculated as the density of an auxiliary system of particles that do not interact with each other and which just move in an effective external field. Now, these two statements, as most of you know, are the theorems of Hohenberg and Kohn, and Kohn and Chan. And in a little more detail, the Hohenberg-Kohn theorem is written down here. It is essentially three statements. The first statement is that there is a one-to-one correspondence between the potential and the ground state density. So what does this tell us? It tells us, if you give me the density and I can go back uniquely to the potential, so in that sense, potential can be viewed as a functional of the density. And then we could imagine we solve the many-body Schrödinger equation with this potential. So all the eigenstates, not just the ground state, all the many-body states are thereby also determined by the density, and hence all these eigenstates and also the corresponding energies, of course, are functionals of the ground state density. So it's a purely formal statement. It doesn't help very much in practice. And then the second statement is a variational principle. It says that there exists a functional of the density, which, if we minimize it, yields the exact ground state energy of the system of interest. And the third statement is that this functional can be written in this form, where the first part, f of rho, is universal. Universal in the sense that this functional is one and the same for all systems, for all Coulomb systems, to be precise. And the external potential of the particular system that we want to calculate enters only in a very simple way, namely via this term. Okay. And one particularly efficient way of exploiting this variational principle is the Kohn-Sham scheme. It says, let me repeat it, that the density of the interacting system of interest can be calculated from the orbitals of an auxiliary non-interacting system, and these non-interacting particles move in a potential which is local, that is, which is a multiplicative operator in configuration space, and it is a functional of the density, this effective potential, so we have to solve these equation self-consistently, and usually this potential is written down in this form. It's the external potential, which is the Coulomb potential of the nuclei, a Hartree term, and an exchange correlation potential, which is given as the functional derivative of an exchange correlation energy. And once again, this guy is a universal functional of the density. The density dependence of this guy is the same for all systems, no matter if you look at the hydrogen atom or the nitrogen crystal, graphite, whatever. This doesn't tell us that this guy as a function of R is the same for all systems. Of course not, right? If I plug into this functional the density of the hydrogen atom, then this gives a certain function of R. If I plug in the density of the nitrogen molecule, it gives another function of R. But the dependence on rho, that's universal. Now in practice, this guy needs to be approximated. But the universality tells you, if I do a good job in approximating this guy, well, then I can apply it to all systems. I come back to exactly this question. For example, no, we can exactly calculate it for all densities. That's one of the points I'm going to discuss later. Okay. so that's the standard form of the Cohn-Sherm equations, and okay, I'm not going to dive into the big successes of DFT. I just put out one transparency here. Most of you know that the first approximation, historically the first, was the LDA, and then improvement of this functional is the so-called GGAs, the generalized gradient approximations, where the functional not only depends, is a function of rho of r, but also depends on the gradients of the density. And this is a famous paper by the Popel group. They calculated the atomization energies of the 32 molecules that you can form from all the first row atoms, including H2. And this is the result, the mean deviation from experiment and the mean absolute deviation from experiment for two of those gradient functionals. And this is the numbers you get in kilocalories per mole. And if you compare it to Hartree-Fock, it's an order of magnitude better. And also if you compare to second order perturbation theory, many body perturbation theory, it's still much better. So this looks like the principle of conservation of troubles seems to be not obeyed here. It looks, I mean, you have to solve the Cohn-Sherm equation, which is easier to solve numerically than the Hartree-Fock equation because it's a local potential, but nevertheless you get much better results, and you even get better results than many body perturbation theory, which numerically is a much bigger effort.
What is the best in the world in the result? What is the best in the world?
Oh, the best in the world is CI, or coupled cluster.
What is this unit?
Oh, that's an important point. It depends on how much time you want to spend on it.
Best available.
Best available? Probably 0.05 or so.
There's not much factor of two.
Yeah.
The way it scales with the size of the system is quite different.
Yeah, that's the crucial point, as we all know. But there's another point that one has to realize here. If you do CI or coupled cluster, you can concentrate on one system, benzene molecule. And you want to calculate that as good as you can. Right? And if you do CI, you can always improve. Take a bigger basis, go from 10 million to 100 million, you will always improve. If you are willing to spend your life on that molecule, you will always improve. This you cannot do in DFT because you have a universal functional. There is no such thing like a functional for benzene. Right? It's in the nature of things. So you can improve the functional. And I'll show you how you can do that, even in a systematic way. But you will improve on average for all systems. So you cannot improve for a particular system. You cannot. That is in the nature of DFT. There's no functional for benzene.
Am I allowed to come with a political remark?
Sure.
I don't like this reference. I mean, we are, after all, physicists. There has been 35 years of hard work of condensed matter physicists to show that the functional works. The chemists have always been too dumb to take it up. Maybe because we didn't get the last kilocalories or whatever microcalories that they need. And it was many systematic developments to get that potential just down to that kind of accuracy we came with. It took
absolutely
30 years for them to get onto it and standing on other people's work, and then they get the Nobel Prize for all your
as you know, I'm a physicist, we all agree. But this is but there's one point to remember here. That's an important point. I mean, it looks like we get for free some much better results with much less effort. But the word effort should be put into perspective, because to get these functionals, it's really 20 or 30 years of analytical work, and many groups have contributed to that until we had these functionals. So, but once you have them, universal, you can apply them to all systems.
Becker.
You can exchange that reference by Alfred Becker. Becker was a physicist, right?
Well, now he claims to be a chemist. All right, so
at least in the first interviews after the Nobel Prize.
Yeah, Popper was a mathematician. Yeah, so.
The first sentence is both of them said, I'm not a chemist.
Right, right. During the month of history.
No wonder. That was a joke. He asked Walter Conant for a month. Yeah? Would it?
So, I haven't, I'm not really going to show any more big successes of DFD, rather than I will now concentrate on the failures. So, and here's a list of things that cannot be described with LDA or GGA. So the first point is that both LDA and GGA are not self-interaction free. So you all know what is meant by this term. If you write down the Hartree energy, and write each density here in the Cohn-Sham way, then you realize that the orbital phi 1 interacts with itself here, and that should not be the case. And we all know in Hartree-Fock this term is exactly cancelled by a self-exchange term. In LDA and GGA this is not the case, and this causes, among other things, the potential for finite systems to fall off exponentially rather than r to the minus 1. And as a consequence of this, we have no Rydberg series in LDA and GGA. Small systems, in particular atoms and very small molecules, have no bound negative ions. That is, for these systems, we cannot calculate in LDA and GGA the electron affinity.
What exactly do you mean by no Rydberg series?
No Rydberg series. The potential falls off exponentially. So there's no Rydberg series. While the true potential should fall off like 1 over R, so there you have a Rydberg series.
It's an excited state.
This is not meant to give you excited states.
Good point. That's exactly the point. Depends on what you want to do with it. Among other things, in my next talk, I will talk about time-dependent density functional theory, and there you will see in what respect the Cohn-Sham single particle excitation energies can be related to the true excitation energies of the system. And then you find in a certain approximation that the true excitation energy is the Cohn-Sham excitation energy plus a correction. Now, obviously, if you have a good potential, then the dominant term, which is the Cohn-Sham excitation energy, will be much better in the first place than if you have a bad potential. So if you use an ordinary Cohn-Sham calculation as a starting point for, let's say, any kind of response properties, then it's a good idea to use a good potential. And because, why is a good idea? It's because the excitation spectrum is better. The crucial point, because this is what enters the response function. All right, but it's a true point. I mean, from the basic theorems, we shouldn't expect anything else. Just ground state energy, that's it. But if you want to use it in response properties, it's a good idea to have something better.
But from your first slide, you said because the potential is a function of density, you could calculate all expectation values.
That's right.
I mean, it's only when you're using the Cohn-Sham approach that it's the relation between the two that causes the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
The Cohn-Sham is exactly.
No, what I said before is that the whole excitation spectrum is a functionale of the ground state density. That's an exact. I'll show you some next week or the weekend. Oh, yes, sure.
you can prove exactly that the true Kohn-Sham potential should be guessed whenever R.
Yes. Okay. So it's a rigorous statement, the true Kohn-Sham potential, since this is a well-defined concept in terms of the many-body wave function, we can prove the true Kohn-Sham potential falls off like 1 over R for finite systems.
But could you also comment maybe due to this list? Because I'm not sure that everything is come from only self-interaction problem.
Yeah.
You have this weighted density functional, yeah, which has no SAC.
Mm-hmm.
Still probably.
Yeah, no, self-interaction only refers to the first point here, right? So this is where it's more or less directly visible that these deficiencies come from the self-interaction error.
I see, but in weighted density,
there is no...
There's 1 over R behavior of the Kohn-Sham potential?
I think so.
I'm not sure.
Well,
no.
Something over R.
Something over R. Yeah, that's not the right thing over R. It's a constant over R, that's right. So you get a Rydberg series, but the wrong one. Okay. Now, a second point is not related to self-interaction, is the fact that you cannot describe dispersion forces. So if you have a system that consists of two subsystems, move them far away, then the interaction potential between the two subsystems decays exponentially rather than the van der Waals form. Then the next point is that band gaps are too small in LDA and GGA, typically a factor of 2. Once again, one could ask, should we really expect that? I'll come back to that question. Then we find cohesive energies of bulk metals typically overestimated in LDA, underestimated in GGA. And finally, which is of most interest in this workshop, strongly correlated systems are not properly described. Most of them turn out to be metals. Nickel oxide has a small gap, but it's not the proper thing. Yep.
Clarity. So, existence of the gap is ground state property? Not metal and insulator.
Yes, it is a ground state property.
So what about iron oxide?
By doing approximately equal to 1/2 is for the gaps is something that goes from 1 to 0.
No, iron oxide is no way. It's always metal. In any local disease.
Yeah, what I was saying.
Okay. Let me quickly.
You can get wrong gaps, even 0 gaps, like germanium. You get the 0 gaps rather than half of the real one.
Okay, it's a ground state property, but corresponding to different particle numbers. So the gap is the ground state energy of the n plus 1 particle system minus twice energy of the n particle system plus e of n minus 1. So this formula can be rigorously rewritten in the form epsilon n plus 1 of the n particle system minus epsilon n of the n particle system plus a quantity which is the discontinuity of the exchange correlation potential. Okay, now when I talked about the gap here, I talked about the Kohn-Sham gap, and this is a factor of 2 too small in LDA.
Or worse.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, sure. So one might ask, and this is, I think, a good question for this workshop. What do we really expect from a strongly correlated system, typical Mott insulator?
What's the problem of calculating the first kind?
Ground state property or not?
Ground state.
First kind, it's a ground state property, and
yeah.
You calculate.
It's also a ground state property.
System to make n plus one, and then.
That's tricky. Yeah. Sorry.
Just to set notation, the epsilon n is the nth Kohn-Shamian value for the n particle system.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So this is the upper of the valence band, and right. This is the lowest level of the conduction band. Okay, so what happens? What do we expect? Of course, we know what comes out in LDA, but suppose we had a better functional. And opinions differ strongly about this. There's currently no clear-cut answer to this. Might be that for a real Mott insulator, this guy, for the exact Kohn-Sham potential, is actually zero. And that the whole gap comes from the discontinuity. Why not? Could be.
Gap is a ground state problem.
Yes. Yes. This is ground state properties. So this does, what I'm saying is, it does not exclude the possibility that the Kohn-Sham system, the true Kohn-Sham system of a Mott insulator, is a metal.
Because it's absolute.
Because the whole gap is the discontinuity. That could be. This would be bad news because it would tell because it would tell you that Kohn-Sham would be a totally unnatural description of the system. But it could also be that with a really good potential, this is already almost exactly the Hubbard U. Who knows? Yeah.
Anyone can point out that there are several variants of TFT, for example, the original one, or spin TFT, etc. They are in principle all exact. But they give, and they would give you all the same ground state energy if you do them truly. But of course, the interpretation of the Kohn-Sham eigenvalues is completely different in one case and in the other. For example, if one would treat a magnetic system with DFT without the spin, then you get Kohn-Sham equations that do not depend on the spin. You have no exchange splitting.
Mm-hmm.
But the system is still ferromagnetic. You're not able to calculate the spin density, but you know the ground state energy. So this is one example. You show the interpretation of Kohn-Sham energies really depends on what scheme you use. If you use pure density Kohn-Sham scheme, you would get another set of Kohn-Sham energies, but still the ground state density would be the same. The ground state energy would be the same.
That's, so to say, a unique answer to that. The only proper, correct DFT is the relativistic DFT, where everything is a function of the four current, and everything is included. But this is not very practical, I know that very well.
Sorry for a historical behind. I mean, if you look at the success, this is just the experience of DFT. I mean, it even started before that. It started with Slade, I guess, and he's trying to do this exchange. The success of this is nobody has ever found a good functional, explicit functional gist of the density. I mean, some astronomy or whatever and 10 other things, I mean, none of those things has really worked. And the way that things came into it is through the back door by Kohn and Sham, which put in grad squared, which put in the Schrödinger equation. That's how it then started to look much, much better. And I think the successes of this has been, I would say, help the functional. The pure functional as such doesn't accomplish very much. But we helped it by putting in a Schrödinger equation. Then we put in some spin density instead of just the density. Now you've got to put in some orbital. You've got to help it more and
that's
more
too difficult.
By extra information to it. So that we sort of...
That's two completely different issues. Sorry. If you put additional densities, as you know, our DFT for superconductors uses the order parameter as an additional density. That's one issue. The other issue is orbital functionals. And that's exactly the topic of my talk that starts now, under the carpet. It's not that you put the orbitals under the back.
To figure out the density, which sort of a function which just looks at this density, this is a Mott insulator. I mean, progress has not...
Well, I'm going to present a certain perspective, namely that the introduction of orbital functionals, namely the Kohn-Sham, which is the first step to this, is really in the spirit of DFT. It is a density function. But that's what I'm going to say now.
The grad square is the first time that orbitals appear.
That,
yeah.
Okay. So now let's look what Hohenberg-Kohn and Kohn-Sham really means. And okay, for that, let's start a bit slowly. Let's look at the ground state densities, which I have depicted here in red, corresponding to different potentials, which I have depicted here in black. And let's ask the following question. Are the ground state densities of two different potentials always different? Or is it possible that two different potentials can lead to the same ground state density? In a bit more mathematical terms, this question means the following. We start with a whole set of almost all possible potentials. The only restriction, and this is not a serious one at this point, is that we shall say that this is non-degenerate ground states, that these potentials lead to non-degenerate ground states. And then we imagine we could solve the many-body Schrödinger equation with each of those potentials. Then I get a wave function, a ground state wave function for each of those potentials. And then for each of these ground state wave functions, I calculate the corresponding density. So this defines two maps. And to prove the Hohenberg-Kohn theorem, which says that this is invertible, we have to prove that these two maps are invertible. So remember the question that I asked before, whether or not two different potentials here can lead to the same density is obviously equivalent to the question whether or not this map, capital G, is invertible. So we have to prove that these two maps, A and A tilde, are invertible. For the first one, A tilde, this is totally trivial, that it is invertible. I just take the many-body Schrödinger equation. So this is some grad I squared over 2 plus sum over V, that's the potential of Ri, psi equals E psi. So, and then I just take this term here on the other side, divide by psi, and that's the inverse map. That's all there is to show. Right, let me write it down. Sum over V of Ri equals sum over grad squared psi divided by psi, which has a minus sign, minus Coulomb interaction minus the constant. That's it.
Doesn't that require you not to have nodes?
Doesn't matter. See, you are in the space of many-body wave functions. So if you give me one, I plug it in the right-hand side here, and this gives the potential. That's it.
If I have a node, how do I divide by 0?
Oh, it will work out fine, because you're, by construction, in the space of ground state wave functions. So, has to be. Right? Because by construction,
even at the node, the equation is solved.
Even at the node. And of course, it's well known that where this guy blows up here at I equals Rj, there the kinetic energy has to compensate this cusp, and this leads to the cusp condition. But so what? I mean, this is just by construction the inverse map. You give me a wave function, I plug it in on the right-hand side, gives you the potential. Okay, so that part is trivial, and the second part is not so trivial. That's the well-known proof by reductio ad absurdum in the Hohenberg-Kohn paper. So I'm not going to...
You also have to know the energy, right? The ground state energy.
No, that's just a constant.
Yeah.
It doesn't change your potential. Well, potential is only defined by a constant anyhow. It doesn't matter.
If you have a different, let's say a wave function, that is a ground state wave function, but with different energy of a different potential. Do it will give you a different potential, but still the same density.
I'm not talking about densities here. This is not the point. I'm just going back from the wave function to the potential. And that's the map. And this is just a constant, and of course, the potential is only determined up to within a constant. And that's what it tells you.
He says that given the ground state density, given the ground state wave function and the ground state energy, you get a potential. Right? Right-hand side depends on the wave
the
function.
The energy is a constant. The potential is just given within a constant shift. Right. Mm-hmm. It doesn't depend on R.
But hopefully this has been made a little more rigorous, because as it stands, I don't completely understand the logic. A mapping is defined from certain space to another space, and that's where you want to invert your mapping, right? So you have to tell me basically what is sort of the space of wave functions in which you're going to invert your mapping. Because if you just say, okay, this is the space of wave functions, we solve the Schrodinger equation for a given potential, you're already assuming that there is that given potential. And
yeah, you were asking a different question.
No,
well, it's a well-defined space. Whether you can write this as a nice space like L2 or so, that's another question.
No, but you
whether for any function you can go back, that's a different story.
Functions that solve the Schrodinger equation for some potential, that's the space of functions where you define your...
That's right.
Topic.
It's a well-defined space. And I'm here talking about only about this space.
That this potential does not have any nodes except where Ri equals Rj, because otherwise... How can you divide by zero something that's not zero?
It's the fact that the Schrodinger equation is satisfied.
Right.
Just that.
Right. You have lots of nodes even where the two parts...
Yeah, plenty of nodes,
but
yeah.
All of them, it's okay. Each psi makes each psi. And the way you go close to it, it's fine. So if you divide, it will be...
So you're saying the kinetic energy has to be zero there as well.
Suppose you
it's just the Schrodinger equation. Just the Schrodinger equation, nothing
stop
else.
The space of
satisfied at all points.
Okay, I'll shut up.
You can see that it's okay.
So you're saying B coming straight.
Okay.
Just stop with the space of the wave function.
Schrodinger equation with some potential, all the possible potentials considered. For such a wave function, you can deduce what the potential was. That's all it's saying.
That's all it's saying. And it's not more and not less. And
right.
One has to be, in DFT, it's very important that one is clear about what the theorems really say and what they don't say. And it's really not more than that. It's a total triviality, this first step. What you were asking is a different question. If I have some space of functions, can I then get back a potential? That's a much harder question. But that's not the issue here.
Mm-hmm. I mean, so the point is to keep you the game now. So, I mean, people first that, you know, just the density is such a simple object. How could you have all this information in it? But the point of the fact is that you're considering an operator and you keep the kinetic energy operator, it's given, the electron-electron interaction is given, and now you have a function of R, the external potential. That's it. It's just said here to be a function of R, and then it's just this duality between this external potential and another function of R, which is the density, and you just play on that. That's all.
That's all it says.
There has to be this unique mapping, and there has to be a variation principle, but apart from that.
Exactly. It's not more and not less than that. Right. So this is what it says here. Given the density, having these two mappings, I can go back uniquely to the potential, solve the Schrodinger equation. And hence, any observable, which is the expectation value of Hermitian operator, can be written as a functional of the density. Functional in that sense, right? Density, go back to the potential, calculate the wave function. Okay. That's, of course, how we never do it in practice. We all know this. But this is what really the Hohenberg-Kohn theorem tells us. Now, this looks like a very abstract thing, this map. But in fact, for non-interacting particles, we can easily construct this map explicitly. Let's do it. So, remember, the Hohenberg-Kohn theorem, the one-to-one correspondence, is valid for any given particle-particle interaction. Usually we consider the Coulomb interaction. But it could be anything else, Yukawa interaction, strong interactions, whatever. It could also be the case where there's no interaction.
Does it have to depend only on the distance?
It doesn't enter. Whatever W is, proof is totally independent of this. But of course the functionals are different ones for each given interaction. And now let's look at this functional for the particular case where the interaction is zero, no interaction. Okay, so the question that we are asking now, given a density, can we find the potential Vs of R such that the solution of the Schrödinger equation in the ground state, so the lowest n occupied states, give this prescribed density? So can we construct this potential? This is exactly the Cohn-by-Cohn construction, right? For a given density, we find that potential which yields in the ground state that density. So, and we can actually do that. We can do that explicitly for any given density. So, to that purpose, let us rewrite the one-body Schrödinger equation a little. We multiply with phi I star and sum over all I. Then we get here sum over phi star phi, which is the density in the second term. Kinetic energy stays as is. On the right-hand side, we get this expression. And then this equation we can solve for the potential. So this is a rigorous identity. It follows from the Schrödinger equation. I'm not talking about density functional theory at all here. That's Schrödinger equation. Okay. Now let us construct this map. So, density given. Then I start with an initial guess for the potential, solve the Schrödinger equation, and then I use this equation, last line of the previous consideration. I plug them in, the result of this solution, plug them in here, but in front I keep the given density rho naught. This expression then defines a new potential. I plug that in here, solve the Schrödinger equation again, get new phis and epsilons, plug it in here on the right-hand side, keeping still this part fixed. And this is iterated until convergence. Provided it converges. And it's sometimes tricky to do it. I mean, we play the usual tricks.
It's not obvious.
Yeah, but it has been done explicitly by many people by now.
In practice.
Molecules, atoms, and even for solid, for silicon.
But is there a mathematical proof that there is always a one fixed point, one solution?
I don't know. I don't think that there is a mathematical proof.
Does it depend on the starting point, the density you put in?
Yeah. Whether or not it converges, it might. Yeah. But if it converges, it's the right answer. Because we know the answer is unique. Right? That's the Hohenberg-Cohn theorem. Whether or not the procedure converges is another question. But if it converges, it's the right answer because the potential is unique. Yes. Yes, I'm going to explain this one. No, that's exactly the point. I'm going to explain that now.
So the phi i's are all excited states?
Of the Cohn-Sham system. So this is something which at first look might be surprising. It tells you that given a density, that you can always calculate the exact quantum potential. This is, but this, the point is,
the potential, and then you go, it depends whether what you like to solve.
Yeah, the point is, usually nobody tells you what the density is. So there's really two things that you have to keep in mind here, right? That's an important point. If you have a density, if you have the density, you can always calculate the corresponding exact Kohn-Cham potential. It, no problem, just do this procedure. The point is, usually you don't have the density.
So,
exactly. No, but wait. The point is, usually you don't have the density, so what you have to do is use the approximate functionals that we have there. But if the situation is such that from some other procedure, let's say combination with many-body theory, DMFD or whatever, you get a density, you could in a second step solve the Kohn-Cham equations, the exact ones to that density, then get a U, for example, to plug this into your DMFD, get a density in that sense. So this can always be used whenever you get the density from somebody else, right?
But Ali, just to make sure, since we are reading mathematical formal land here, for a little while, this is the formal explicit construction of the
explicit numerical.
I completely understand. Actually, we could talk about similar theory of other representations, but from a mathematical point of view, it doesn't prove anything, right? Because it could very well be that given some rho of r, this map doesn't converge.
That the numerical procedure doesn't converge.
Well, the mathematical procedure you described here doesn't have a solution R2.
Okay.
Or
R2. So, no. I mean, Hohenberg-Kohn theorem tells you the answer is unique.
Well, it could have a strange answer.
It could.
No.
No, the thing might not converge. Yeah. But if it converges, the answer is a unique answer. Yes. Now, it might be a repelling fixed point, whatever. Then it doesn't.
From the point of view of mathematics.
Yeah. Also, if you want to live in mathematical land, you can just say, I'll search all potentials, Vs, to find the one that gives rho. So.
Say that again.
If you want to live in the land of mathematics, we don't need an explicit construction. We'll just say, why not search all potentials till we find the one that gives rho?
Exactly. That's one way of doing it. It has actually been done for some systems like the helium atom, where you have a very precise variational wave function. You just minimize and then get the potential to any accuracy you want.
But pardon, are there
another way?
Any potential problems?
So now your question.
No, but I have a different question first. Is there any potential problems with rows of R's that are close to one another giving very different potentials? In other words, is it a well-defined in the sense that if the row of R is close, if row 1 of R is close to row 2 of R, that you're looking at the two potentials?
What is the output of exponent?
I mean, have people done numerical studies of that?
Many people have done this numerical procedure to calculate the Kohn-Cham potential, the exact Kohn-Cham potential, from a very good density, which might come from quantum Monte Carlo or from a CI. And as far as I know, it has always converged. But this is a question, I think the answer is not really known. I'm sure there's cases where you have densities that are very close to each other where the answer is very different. Pretty sure about this. Okay, now your first question. If I just give some function rho naught of r, of which I don't know that it's the ground state density, where does this lead to? Another question, in other words, you are asking the question, given a function rho of r, does there always exist a potential? Hohenberg-Kohn tells you it's unique, but does it always exist? And the answer to this is by now known. And the answer is yes, in a certain sense. There are densities which are linear combinations of degenerate ground state densities. So if you have degenerate ground states of your Kohn-Cham system and you write down a density rho naught of r, some k, rho k of r, where these rho k's are degenerate ground state densities. then there is cases where no pure determinant exists that yields this as a density of a pure state. Right, so there exist densities, they are of this structure, and in those cases usually you cannot construct a single determinant and a potential whose ground state this determinant is, such that the density comes from the usual expression. The theorem also tells you that this is the worst case. There's no other situations.
Whose theorem is that?
It's been proven by mathematicians Chase and Chase and Ruzhkai on discretized systems. So systems on a lattice, but the point is, no matter how fine, how large the lattice is, can be finite, can be infinite, for any system on a lattice, this is a true statement. There are other densities in the real continuum limit which are kind of pathological, which are also not representable. But I would say from the physicist point of view, we usually solve the Cohn-Sham equations on a grid anyhow. That's good enough. Okay, so that's the answer to that question. So, what does this mean now? If we're given a density, we can, via this procedure, explicitly calculate the potential orbitals. And in that sense, not only in an abstract Hohenberg-Cohn mapping sense, but also in an explicit sense of this procedure, we can, for example, calculate this functional. This is now a density functional in that sense. Functional means you give me the density and I calculate the number. Right? You give me the density, I go through this procedure, calculate the orbitals that belong to this density, calculate this number. So this functional is known as the kinetic energy functional of non-interacting particles. It's a functional of the density in exactly that sense. And moreover, any orbital functional, anything that you might dream up, Fock term, for example, of Archie Fock, which is an explicit function of orbital, via this construction, can be viewed as an implicit functional of the density. And this has been like this from the early days of DFT, right? The Hohenberg-Cohn theorem and Cohn-Sham theorem doesn't tell you anything but that. The functional, the total energy functional of density functional theory is actually, if you're talking about the true function, is never an explicit function of the density. It's always an implicit functional in that sense. Yep. Okay. So here's a bit provocative statement towards the exact functional. So
practice, how many states do you need?
Yep. For this construction that I just showed,
yes. It's
just the lowest n. But you get them all, basically.
Lowest n, which
the lowest, in energy, right. The lowest n in energy, the occupied ones.
Oh. Has this also been extended to finite temperatures?
This procedure has not been applied, as far as I know. But in principle, it could.
It should, right?
Yeah. Don't see any. Don't see any practical problem there. Okay, now just remember the interacting case again. So the many-body wave function is a functional of the density, ground state. And let's just remember how the Hohenberg-Cohn functional that is minimized is constructed. So we're looking at a specific system. V naught of R is the potential of that specific system. And then we define the Hohenberg-Kohn functional as this many-body wave function that uniquely corresponds to the given density. And then plus this external potential of the given system of interest. And this then, if you take it apart, plus integral rho of R V naught of R. Then, as I mentioned before, this functional here is universal. It's usually called F of rho. And then the standard way of writing the total energy functional, writing this as T of rho plus W of rho, is just the following. You write first the functional Ts of rho, which is not this one, but it's the corresponding non-interacting one. And then you write your external potential term, rho of R, V naught of R. And then you add a Hartree term. You do that because this is usually the dominant contribution. Okay, and all the rest you call exchange and correlation. And then if you compare here, you instantly know what the exchange correlation energy functional is. It's the difference of the full kinetic energy and the non-interacting kinetic energy. Plus the difference of the full interaction minus the Hartree term. So plus W of rho minus, let me just abbreviate it, E Hartree. Okay, so starting from this representation of the total energy, which is written down here, we have three non-trivial functionals here, non-interacting kinetic energy, exchange and correlation. And then the ancient prehistoric version of density functional theory used LDA or GGA type approximations for all those three. For example here, for the kinetic energy, you get this LDA term, which is known as Thomas Fermi, and the Weizsäcker term. And if you then use the Hohenberg-Kohn variational principle, it gives you Thomas Fermi type equations. Then, in the next generation, which is Kohn-Cham theory, you have the idea of using the exact functional for this kinetic energy contribution. But you stick with LDA and GGA for these contributions. And this gives you the usual Kohn-Cham equations as we know it.
But is it trickier how to take the non-interacting kinetic energy? Of course, it works, but it's...
Okay, and then what is the natural generalization, as I would say? Well, if we get such a big improvement by choosing for the non-interacting kinetic energy the exact expression, why not use orbital functionals in more and more exact expressions for these terms as well? For example, for exchange. So this is what I would call a third generation of DFT. And in fact, this provides you with a systematic way of constructing the exchange correlation functional. So this is traditional LDA, GGA. You forget about this now. Then what we do is we want to construct this exchange correlation functional. So once again, in our minds, we go through this procedure. Given a density, we want to calculate this number. Given a density, we go through this numerical procedure, calculate the Kohn-Cham potential and the corresponding orbitals. Once we have the orbitals, in fact, we do not only have the occupied ones, but we have all of them, we can also calculate the corresponding Green's function, which is a trivial functional of the density, because the orbitals and the orbital energies are trivial functionals of the density. We just have them constructed.
But is that the same? This is now the exact exchange for the non-interacting, because you take the non-interacting orbital.
It is the exact exchange functional. Not four. Functional means it's a functional of the density. You can plug in any density you want.
Yeah.
This is what functional means.
Yeah. But just what should I call the thing? What should I call it? As we had before, the kinetic energy is not the exact kinetic energy functional, but it's a functional of the kinetic energy of the non-intact system. The same way you construct here, the exchange.
You can call it
exchange and correlation separately. You have to define the sum.
So you plug in something.
Good point. Good point.
The way this is split between exchange and correction is made.
That's my next. That's absolutely. That's my next transparency.
Okay.
You can call it which.
It's an electron gas problem. Yes, I'm having the wrong density.
No. What I'm trying to emphasize here is that you're constructing the functional. In the sense that I said before, you're given a density, you want to calculate this number.
But could you comment just
given the density,
define it yet.
Given the density, and you can do this procedure for any given rho of R. So that's the point. Anything. It's a functional. Right?
So far, that must be a definition of.
Yes, that's coming in the next one. Okay. So what I can do is I can calculate the Kohn-Cham-Green's function, I can write down all my energy diagrams. And obviously, if I add them all, that's the exact exchange correlation energy. It's obvious, right? That's a systematic way of doing it.
Now,
so,
in your definition of exchange correlation, you also have this kinetic piece.
Well, that's contained in that.
Then it's important that if you're exact, you have J equal to K.
Just a practical question.
Yeah.
One can construct this the functional systematically like this,
mm-hmm.
but in practice, one cannot work out very far in this perturbation.
Yeah. Oh well, I'll show you results in a minute.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. This is. At this point, I just want to get the principle straight. Right? So this.
In terms of you say some of high order diagrams, it seems to me that the diagrams are not just the standard.
Yeah, there's some tricky things because in practice you kind of have to bootstrap it,
yes,
because the
yes.
potential
right.
itself
right.
enters, etc. So you get some non-standard stuff there.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
But
yeah.
If you have all of them, then you're back to the exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's only when you stop that you are having.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Well, I don't find that one. Let me just do it on the board. Why do I call this exchange? So, as Patrick said, we are starting out with the whole thing, EXC. How do we do the distinction? Well, we start out with a full functional, F of rho. Definition is over there. And we just expand it in powers of E squared. So there will be a term E squared of zero order, F zero of rho. Then there will be a term E squared of first order, F1 plus, and there will be second order F2 and so on. Okay, this one is nothing but Ts of rho. Right? E squared doesn't appear, right? It's obvious. So this term, first of all, you get the Hartree term. But then you also get another term, which is this first order diagram, which is the density functional definition of exchange. So in DFT jargon, it's usually called Cohn-Sham exchange or DFT exchange. Okay, and everything above that. But this is really a definition. I mean, and I think it's a natural definition to say, well, first order in E squared of the expansion of this functional. Let's call that exchange.
So this differs from normal Hartree top exchange.
Yes. 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 I come back to that. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the rest is called correlation. But this is in a sense just a name. Yeah, since we were just discussing this point, maybe I should explicitly compare with Hartree-Fock. Now, since we have defined this as correlation, and this, the first order term, as exchange, one may ask, what is the difference to Hartree-Fock? And in particular, what is the difference to the usual correlation energy, which is defined as the exact total energy minus the Hartree-Fock total energy. So Hartree-Fock total energy means I take the total Hartree-Fock, total energy Hartree-Fock functional, and evaluate it at the self-consistent Hartree-Fock orbitals. Right? This is the usual definition, the quantum chemical definition, written down first by Levdin in the 50s, what correlation energy is. Now the DFT correlation energy, we define it in this way. It's somehow different. Well, first of all, it's a functional, but if we evaluate this functional at the exact density, we imagine we could do that, then, okay, what do we get? Here's the definition still. So if I take this functional F, subtract TS, subtract the two first order terms, then we are left with correlation. So that's this definition here is the first line. Okay, now I add and subtract the external potential term. Still correct. And then, obviously, F plus the external potential term is the exact total energy. Now let's have a close look at this expression. Now, if you imagine this written down as an orbital functional, where you could plug in any orbitals, this is really the Hartree-Fock total energy functional. Orbital functional. But it's not evaluated at the Hartree-Fock orbitals, it's evaluated at the Cohn-Sham orbitals that correspond to this given density that you plug in here. So the DFT correlation energy is really not exactly the same as this. It is the total energy minus the Hartree-Fock functional evaluated at the Cohn-Sham orbitals. Now one might ask, well, how much do they differ? And we have done a few years ago. And for a few systems where you know the exact density from Monte Carlo or from variational calculations, and this is what you get. In the case of a more strongly correlated system, you get a bigger difference. For those, it's a smaller difference.
QC is from what?
It's not that small, yeah. It's not that small. Quite true. Yeah.
QC is from QC.
QC means quantum chemistry. So it's a quantum chemistry definition here. So we know this is a situation where we have the exact solution. So we know the exact total energy, but we can also do a Hartree-Fock calculation for the system that gives you this number, and the difference gives you this.
And this is, and the DFT calculation was done by retaining all the E square terms but dropping out the other.
No, it's not a DFT calculation.
No.
It's an exact calculation.
No, but you call it ECD. Okay, the exact calculation.
We know the exact energy. We know the exact energy. We also know the exact density. So we can go through this inversion. So we know the exact orbitals corresponding to the exact density. We can plug them in the Fock, in the Hartree-Fock functional, get this number. And this is this.
So DFT is also exact.
It's the exact DFT. It's not no approximations here. It's the exact DFT number.
Numerical accuracy is
far beyond. Low. Far beyond. In fact, has an interesting anecdote here that some numbers were published before quantum Monte Carlo results, and we did our calculation with those with these allegedly exact densities, and we found that this inequality was violated. So something had to be wrong with the numbers.
Densities. You are getting densities from term C. That's
well, not well. Density far out is critical, but those don't contribute to the energy much. So it's well. The authors claimed it was correct by 10 digits, but it was not.
Especially Monte Carlo.
Oh, but the energy for the helium atom. This is known to 18 digits or so. I mean, and this is amazing. Yeah. So.
I have a question, because I'm confused about something. Your exchange correlation potential includes a kinetic energy piece.
That's right.
But that didn't appear in this order E squared, or did it, and I somehow missed it. I mean, you have the...
It appears
the
there, yes, yes.
Was just this Kahn-Sham piece, but shouldn't there be an order E squared piece in the kinetic energy?
Or well, you don't see it, but it is there.
If it wasn't there, you'd be using the Hartree-Fock orbitals. That's...
Kinetic
energy function doesn't have
an
E squared from the correlation
part.
That's why it's called correlation
part. So T minus
TS doesn't have an E squared.
Yeah, but in second order there is one, right?
I'm confused by what the two of you are just saying.
Well,
the four E squared terms are coming because the many-body wave function has order E
squared correct. Wait another 10 minutes, then you will see exactly how this is done in practice. It works with a coupling constant integration where then you actually only have to evaluate the usual energy diagrams, no kinetic things, but you do it for all coupling constants and integrate over it.
Yeah.
That's the way you do it. All right, so now we have an orbital functional, for example, exact exchange.
I'm sorry, I didn't get it. Which correlation energy was the lower? Are you saying that the Kohn-Sham Hartree-Fock energy, if I can call it that, is lower than the quantum chemistry Hartree-Fock energy?
No, that's higher.
Okay.
And for that reason, the Kohn-Sham correlation energy is lower. Okay.
Define it with the exact exchange.
With the exact exchange. That's important. Yeah.
No inequality is whatsoever, right?
That's right.
What we usually call correlation energy is zero.
Well, this is a matter of concept here. I mean, for two electron systems, you can calculate it, but I mean, one has to know what quantities one is talking about. And it's really not the same. Okay. Now, how you do that in practice, I'm going to show you some numbers now, in a minute. So we're given some orbital functional, but the exchange correlation potential is, of course, defined, as usual, it's the functional derivative with respect to the density, right? So we have to calculate the derivative of this implicit functional of the density, and this is done by functional derivatives, chain rule. First we take the derivative with respect to the orbitals, then the derivative of the orbitals with respect to the potential, and then the derivative of the potential with respect to the density. This guy here, the change of the density with respect to a potential, that's a response function, so that guy is an inverse response function. So we can multiply this whole equation with the response function itself, get this expression. Now the right-hand side is known. It's known functional of orbitals. First of all, given some approximation, always think of the Fock term, we can easily calculate this derivative. But this derivative we can also calculate exactly. Exactly, with no approximation, it's obvious, we just use first order perturbation theory, right? Because we have to calculate the infinitesimal change of an orbital due to an infinitesimal change in the potential. First order perturbation theory is exact. So this is a given function of orbitals. The Cohn-Sham response function is also known. So this then is an integral equation that determines the exchange correlation potential. And this integral equation has to be solved in each iterative Cohn-Sham step. So it is the usual Cohn-Sham procedure, right? You get a density, you get orbitals. From this density and the orbital, you get a new potential, plug in the new potential in the Cohn-Sham equation, solve again, etc. Only the step of getting the new potential from the new orbitals, that's more involved. You have to solve an integral equation. But it's the good old Cohn-Sham procedure. Now, if you really fully solve this integral equation, it's pretty hard to do. But there is tricks, and one is known as KLI, Krieger, Lee, and Jafrati, where you can do this semi-analytically. So what you actually have to do is, in each iterative step, you only have to solve an n by n eigenvalue equation, the matrix inversion, where n is the number of occupied orbitals.
But to get delta v with respect to vs, the functional derivative of the orbitals with respect to the potential, no, that one is easy, the one below, the known functional of 5j.
This one?
Is not known analytically.
This is known analytically. For every given expression for exc, you can do it analytically. Think of the Fock term, for example.
Well, the first part, yes, the second
but the
part.
Full
this one. Which are you asking about? This one?
That term, yes.
No, that's
no, that you just do it with perturbation theory.
That's a response function of the Weinbach Schrödinger equation.
Yeah, one can view it that way, but well, it's just do first order perturbation theory.
Oh, I see.
And delta phi j is, what is it, sum over k, k not equal j, of k delta vs phi j and phi k of r, right? This is r divided by epsilon j minus epsilon k, or the other way. So delta phi j by delta vs sum over k. I have a phi k star of r prime, phi j of r prime, phi k of r, epsilon j minus epsilon k. That's the exact derivative. Yeah.
But you have also occupied states.
Unoccupied states, yes.
Unoccupied states.
Yeah. Yeah. And in fact, you can express both sides essentially by a Green's function type of expression, and then one way of really solving this explicitly, if you want to solve the full equations, not doing the KLI approximation, but if you want to do the full thing, you actually calculate the Cohn-Sham-Green's function in each step.
Right.
And then you get both the right and the left-hand side. That's one way.
So But at the end of the day, you need to know this, because then at the beginning I thought this was a functional of the occupied conscious states.
No, it's in general all. In general all. That's an important point.
So that's beyond density function.
No,
because the density also determines the unoccupied ones. Okay,
exactly.
Very good.
Exactly.
Okay, thanks. But then there's no problem.
Practice, you are not having infinite sums when you want to have
that. No, you don't want to have that in practice.
What,
yeah.
Response, sum.
Yeah, well, one standard way of doing this is really, and there's for atoms at least, there's a program that you can get from Ewald Engel, it really calculates the Green's function.
Mm-hmm.
Then you have the response function, it's just the bubble, and you have the right-hand side as well. That's one way of doing it.
Or you might solve some sort of some kind of equation as well. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm. Okay, so what orbital functionals do we have at present? Well, one thing that you could do is something like order by order perturbation theory. This is usually a good approximation, or not so bad for finite systems, but as we all know, if you want to do a metal in second order perturbation theory, diagram diverges. So what, if one really wants a good function, what one really has to do is some kind of RPA type resummation. And this goes under the heading functionals constructed from time-dependent DFT. It's an RPA type equation that in addition has an exchange correlation kernel. I will talk about this subject in greater detail. Then the Sick functional. Just subtract the self-energy. This is maybe the oldest orbital functional in the history. Then meta-GGAs and interaction strength interpolation. This is the latest orbital functionals pursued in the group of John Perdue. We'll talk about those as well. Meta-GGA means that it's an explicit functional of the density and the kinetic energy density. Okay, then hybrid functionals where you take some fraction of Hartree-Fock exchange, of the usual exchange term, and then add some GGA for correlation. And finally, there's yet another category, which is the Kohler-Zalvedi functional, which has been derived from a Jastrow-type ansatz for the many-body wave function, and then you can rewrite your correlation energy in terms of that, and then you make certain approximations for the exponent in the Jastrow function, and then ultimately end up with this functional. Okay, now I'm going to show you some results. Current density functional theory. Well, that's a different category. That would be under the heading of additional densities. And so the first prime example is what Patrick mentioned, is spin density functional theory. In addition to the ordinary density, you have the spin density. In fact, nowadays nobody does ordinary DFT, and we always do spin DFT. We tend to forget this fact, but it's always spin density functional theory. So we never have actually the density alone. It's either the spin up and spin down density, or in a more elaborate function of the density and the spin density. Okay. Then the next step would be if you have, for example, current in the ground state, so that which is the case typically for open shells. Right, then you might think of having an additional density, namely the current density. If you want to describe systems that have a particular order parameter, like superconductors, you add in the functional an additional density, which is the superconducting order parameter. Or another formulation for anti-ferromagnets has been formulated, one where the additional density is a staggered density. So this can always be formulated. But for each of those generalizations of DFT, you can do orbital functionals or explicit density functionals. So that's really a different story. I can talk about current density functional theory if you like, but it's really a different talk.
Separate talk. Perhaps you can comment on something that always bothered me. That when spin and charge is easy to see, that you can prescribe the expectation values of two operators that commute. But density and current are, at least in non-relativistic theory, are non-commuting operators.
Mm-hmm.
So now you have to really prescribe the values of two operators which don't commute, the expectation value of those things in the ground state. That doesn't cause any formal difficulties?
No.
So you just can follow the same machinery?
Yeah. It's pretty straightforward to prove Hohenberg-Kohn theorems, etc. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. There's one tricky point. Usually you do not have the full map to the potential, but only the second one, the Hohenberg-Kohn one, from the density to the wave function in those cases. I mean, in current density functional theory, we have vector potentials, right? So you could think of whether or not you have really a one-to-one correspondence between vector potentials and currents. And there's examples that show you that you don't. But it's really the second step from the wave function to the density, which is the important one. Okay, now some numbers. This is atomic ground state energies calculated with this orbital functional procedure, solving this integral equation where we use the KLI approximation to do it. For the first row atoms, the last column here says exact. Now, exact means the experimental numbers, so you add up the ionization potentials, but then in addition, you subtract relativistic corrections. And to the digits given, one believes that these relativistic corrections are known. So to the digits given, these numbers are believed to be the correct non-relativistic total energies. Okay, and then the crucial line is this one. This is the mean absolute deviation of these various calculations from the exact one. This is a state-of-the-art quantum chemical calculation, so the mean deviation is 4.5 millihartree. This is two of the popular GGAs, Becker Li Yang Par and Purdue Wang 91. It's about a factor of two worse. And this orbital functional is almost as good as the quantum chemical calculation. For this, we have used the Kohler-Zalvetti function, which is this just a factor thing where it comes from.
Can that be derived diagrammatically,
No. Actually, I mean, this looks very nice, but this Kohler-Zalvetti function has a number of problems, and I'm not really a great friend of it. I'm just showing this kind of for historical. It was kind of the first OEP calculation that included correlation. So that's what I'm showing.
Just for education, anybody, people here, is there any system, any atom, for which just retaining the perturbative terms do already a reasonable job, or is it always insufficient?
By perturbative, you mean something like second order correlation?
Yeah.
Well, those are very close to the. Remember, I showed one transparency for these molecules to MP2, Miller-Plessy 2. That's second order perturbation theory. So those are not, definitely not as good as these gradient functionals. We would have to at least go to a third order or so.
I mean, just a comment about that. There are so many body problems where truncating the perturbation theory at some finite order and not evaluating it so consistently gives you better results than doing it either self-consistent and truncated to some finite order, or trying to sum an infinite set of diagrams that you only sum because you can sum them, not because they're necessarily the most important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So it would be interesting if there were some analog of that within this situation, because that would be a system that the functionals would be relatively simple. Although I can't quite see.
Mm-hmm.
Sequential theory has self-consistency all weaves through it, and I don't know how one would get at this issue of whether you're doing whether that piece is self-consistent or not.
Yeah. That's a good point. I will actually come back to that when I discuss some of these explicit functionals that we have now. Yeah.
What you're showing here is simply combination of exact exchange and colossal mixing.
That's right.
There's no integral equations and stuff.
Well, even for exact exchange, this would be an integral equation, but we solve it with this KLI trick, where it's actually only an n by n matrix inversion.
No, because in the sense of what you say, you're not simply taking the arbitrary.
Well, I didn't say what this KLI trick is. It does not give the exact answer, but for the system studied so far, where you can both do an exact OEP solution of the integral equation and the KLI trick one, it's typically in the six digits. So, very small error introduced.
But if you have both of them explicitly given in terms of the orbitals,
yes,
then
you have
to simply need to solve some Hartree-Fock-like equations.
No, it's not a Hartree-Fock-like equation.
Simply you have a different piece.
Oh, this is an important point. This is an important point. Oops. The guy that you get here is always a local potential. So it's even if you start with the same orbital functional as you do in Hartree-Fock. The results that you get are very different from Hartree-Fock, not for the total energy, but in other respects.
And by the way, where do you see that? It always must be a multiplicative potential, as you said in the very, very start.
I was going to give you that as a homework assignment.
I know.
It's like that by construction.
By construction. You put all the, possible dependence on gradients in some other piece.
No, the functional depends on gradient. Just in the one-body Schrödinger equation, by construction, it is a local potential. One can think of other theories where it's not a local potential, but that's not Kohn-Sham.
Right. You could add some other kinetic energy like pieces or higher powers and so on.
By construction.
Are there GGA topic approximations available in two dimensions?
I don't know offhand. Not that I'm aware of. I mean, the LDA is available, but do you know something? I don't know. Okay, so, but to come back to your question, we really solve this thing, and even if we do just exact exchange, we start from the Fock functional, the potential that we get here is always local. So it's really a different story from Hartree-Fock, and you get results that are very different from Hartree-Fock.
Okay, functional explicitly given in terms of the orbitals rather than the density.
Mm-hmm.
Still find that minimum in some other way or not? Like
it's not the same minimum.
It's not the same minimum.
One way of viewing this, just think of exact exchange, only the Fock term, no correlation.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it in the Hartree-Fock sense, you take the free variation of this functional, get the Hartree-Fock equation with a non-local potential. One way of viewing DFT exchange is you take the same functional as a starting point, but then you minimize under the subsidiary condition that the orbitals come from a local potential.
That your single particle equation must have a local potential.
Yeah. So you minimize the same functional, but with the subsidiary condition that the potential is local. And then you end up with the same equation, with the OEP equation. So this is also makes clear the total energy will be somewhat higher, evidently. But it's very little, typically in the six digits, parts per million. But other quantities, like the single particle spectrum, is very different. Like in Hartree-Fock, is well known, you do not get a Rydberg series. While with exact exchange potential, you do. Also, the band gaps are very different. As you know, Hartree-Fock, they're way too large. This is calculations in the group of Andy Girling. This is for some semiconductors here, plotted versus the experimental band gap, LDA, they're too low. While if you do exact exchange, they're in much closer agreement with experiment. So this is the Cohn-Sham gap, right? We're not adding the discontinuity.
But it's not the eigenvalue gap.
Yes, 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 it is.
Because when you do the En plus 1 minus En formula,
yes,
it doesn't give the eigenvalue gap,
yeah? Yep. So this is the eigenvalue gap. The difference between the lowest orbital energy of the conduction band and the highest of the valence band. If you compare the numbers with GW, GW is still slightly better.
But GW is meant to be correct. This is the quasi-particle energy.
Yep.
Yes?
Yep.
There is no ground to hear that this should...
Absolutely. 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 Even worse. What you should do, really, as I demonstrated before, you should add the discontinuity. Just a few, and I'll do that in a second. Just a few more numbers. So it's not just the elemental semiconductors and the 3-5 components. We have made calculations on the 2-6 components. I mean, universally, everywhere, you strongly improve the gap. And it's just a single particle gap.
Just to make sure I understand, exact exchange means that you take as your orbital functional the term you showed us before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and evaluate it with this integral equation in each iterative step.
Any measure of correlation energy?
Correlation energy in these calculations is taken LDA.
Kotani did a similar calculation, but he did correlation in RPMA.
Yes.
That goes right back to LDA. At least for silicon in the simple semiconductors.
That doesn't surprise me. Another thing that maybe is even more important is also from the Girling group. This is cohesive energies, which is always a bit difficult. And again, experimental versus calculated numbers. And here, if you do exact exchange and do correlation in GGA, then you get quite interesting, quite nice results. And again, this has been checked for a large number of systems, so it's not really coincidence, probably.
Proper GGA news. I see here always comparisons with LDA, and I think concerning.
Oh, this is LDA. This is GGA.
No, but GGA without this other function, without the correct Hartree-Fock.
No, this is EXX, exact exchange, for the exchange part,
yeah.
And LDA or GGA for.
Well, I meant to compare to the green number, right?
Oh, green everything is LDA. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So why don't you put there a GGA? Because we know that LDA is so far off that it's useless. It's just garbage.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to add this GGA. So I think it's, I mean, all this, that's something, a little criticism that I see very often, that people today still compare their very accurate numbers to LDA.
Nobody does LBA because it gives garbage. I mean, if you want to calculate numbers, everybody does GGA because as soon as you talk about heat energies, LBA is just not good and consistently, right? It errors of a road, which makes it useless. And with GGA, you're much better. I mean, I think it would look very closely into almost the best results here, isn't it?
I don't think so. I don't think so. And cohesive energies, even in the GGAs, are not so much improved.
Molecules that you get a factor of 10.
There is tremendous. The molecules, no question. But cohesive energies of infinite solids, not so.
Next.
Is this always calculated at the experimental lattice constant or at the theoretical?
Don't remember. I would have to look that up.
The question was, is it calculated all at the same lattice constant or each at
this
minimum?
This is I think it's consistent with at the experimental, all of them.
At the experimental lattice.
I think so, but I'm not sure. I would have to look it up. Okay, and this is maybe the last transparency for today, or for the morning. Now what one should really do is not just take the Kohn-Cham gap, right? And it gives marvelous results for many systems. But what one should do is add to it the discontinuity. And with this orbital functional, with the exact exchange, one can actually calculate the discontinuity. If you rewrite it in terms of Green's function and so on, this is a way of expressing the discontinuity for the exact exchange functional. So it's the difference of the local exchange potential and the Fock exchange potential evaluated at the lowest orbital of the conduction band minus the same expression evaluated at the highest of the valence band. So now look the result here. If you add this discontinuity to the Kohn-Cham gap, remember these red results were the ones that agreed nicely with experiment, right? You add it, you get back to the Hartree-Fock gap.
Well, that's telling you that the total energies are bad then, isn't it? Well, the differences of total energy.
No. No, no. From this formula. This is for the exact exchange functional. This is a rigorous representation of the discontinuity.
But surely if the total energies were all good, that all you're doing when you add the red and the blue is a total energy subtraction.
No. That's the last, the really last answer. Let me put it this way. The fact that this really goes back to Hartree-Fock, this is not surprising. The surprising thing is that the red ones alone agree so well with experiments for a large variety of systems. Now, why is it not surprising that it goes back to Hartree-Fock? Well, just look at the Hartree-Fock, how it comes out in how the gap comes out in Hartree-Fock compared to DFT. In Hartree-Fock, if you evaluate this expression, which is the rigorous one for the gap, you end up with this. There's no discontinuity in Hartree-Fock, no such thing. And the easiest way to see this is from the fact that Hartree-Fock is a particular approximation for the self-energy. So those are the poles of the Green's function, which are actually ionization potential minus electron affinity, which is the same thing as this. Right, so in Hartree-Fock, this is the right number. While in DFT, you get this orbital energy difference plus the discontinuity. But now we know, at least by experience, from all systems considered, that the total energies in Hartree-Fock and in exact exchange Kohn-Cham are practically identical. They're extremely close. So these numbers here should be very close. And hence, the discontinuity should take you back to the Hartree-Fock gap. Very simple. So this is in line with what you said before.
Yeah, but it's telling you your total energies are bad in the same way the Hadron Collider ones are.
Unless correlations are wrong.
Yeah. So now what does this mean? And that's currently an open question. So the question is really, these red numbers are very good compared to experiment for many, many systems, practically for all semiconductors. How come? Is it, and this would be a nice possibility, that the exchange discontinuity, the blue part here, more or less exactly cancels the correlation discontinuity, so that we get away with a pure Kuhn-Sham gap? It's one possibility. It's not clear whether this is really the case.
I think the correlation should not affect too much the results you get with pure exchange. You want?
Yeah, but in which way? That's the question. If you have a very good correlation potential, it could be that this changes the Kuhn-Sham gap again.
Right.
But it could also be that it does not change the Kuhn-Sham gap and it just affects the discontinuity.
Right.
And this is currently an open question.
If you find it exactly strange, for instance,
one of these strongly correlated systems. Has not been done, I think. Did Kutani do the nickel oxide?
He did. He also, but he put in again, he didn't just do exact exchange, he added correlation in our proof.
Mm-hmm.
He did both.
He did both. I don't think he did. It turns out if you're doing just exact exchange on transition metals, you get really, really poor results. The bands look awful. In iron, for example, the exact exchange bands in iron, without somehow putting in a correlate, a non-local, correlation.
He did nickel oxide, yeah.
No, he did. I think he did manganese oxide and maybe nickel oxide. Mm-hmm. But even just elemental iron, the results look really disastrous if you do this kind of prescription. You have to put in RPA like correlation for it to come back reasonable again. It's not like it will be. It's the same with the gaps. The gaps also go back to the VA gaps in some kind.
No, I remember the Catania, you see.
Although, I mean, this calculation, I mean, a pure RPA, first of all, it's very hard to do. I tried to understand how he does this trick of doing the functional derivative somehow numerically. I honestly, I don't understand how he does it. Then.